Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
How many decades have you lived through? I've gone through the 90s, the 2000s, and the 2010s. So I'm talking about you were there at the beginning of the decade, remember it hopefully somewhat, and then you were there to ring in the next decade. Because I've lived through part of the 80s, and like you, I'm going through part of the 2020s. Maybe you've only been through one or two decades. Maybe this is your first decade. You're a very precocious listener of the Council of Trent podcast. Or perhaps you've been through six, seven, eight, nine decades. If you have, you've probably noticed a lot of cultural changes along the way. And so on today's episode of the podcast, I want to talk about the days each of these respective decades died or ended. Not chronologically. I mean, we all know that, right? It's 9 years, 364 days into the decade. I'm talking about specific cultural moments that marked or began a shift into the cultural zeitgeist of the next decade. So that's what we're going to talk about today. If you're new to the podcast, welcome, by the way. This is the Council of Trent podcast. On Mondays and Wednesdays, we talk apologetics, theology, how to explain and defend the Catholic faith. But on Fridays, we talk about whatever I want to talk about. And today, we're going to talk about the day each of the decades died. Now, obviously, there's a lot of approximation here. When I pick these days, it's not necessarily exact. We're going to have some latitude, a few years off the ends of some of these decades. So some of them get pretty close to be right on the money of when one decade ended and another began. So it will result in some of the decades being stretched out and others being squished in a little bit. All right, first one, 1910s. So 1910s, you're seeing advancements in transportation technology, in other conveniences for people. But unfortunately, this decade was marred by two tragic events. Two worldwide calamities, really. One would be the Great War, which we call World War I, 1914 and 1918. The other would be the influenza pandemic, which at the time was called the Spanish flu pandemic. And that lasted from 1918 to 1920. So most of the decade, it's not a pleasant decade to be going through. It's not one of my favorite decades on my list of time travels to be able to go back to. So when did the 1910s end? The Spanish flu pandemic ended around April of 1920. And after that, people wanted to return to normalcy. The president was even saying we need a return to normalcy. That ushered in the roaring 20s, right? You got flappers. You think about The Great Gatsby by F. Scott Fitzgerald. I would say that the 1910s ended on November 2nd, 1920. So November 2nd, 1920 was the day that a radio station, KDKA, made the first commercial broadcast. Radios were still kind of a fledgling outfit, usually for hobby enthusiasts, people who used ham radios. Radio was more for personal communication, but some people did use it to listen to various broadcasts. But this was the first commercial broadcast by a radio station, KDKA. And they picked November 2nd, 1920 to show people the power of radio because that was the day, that was election day. It was the Harding-Cox presidential election. And for their first commercial broadcast, they announced the results of the election. And I'll actually play for you part of that broadcast right now.
This is KDKA of the Westinghouse Electric and Manufacturing Company in East Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. We shall now broadcast the election returns. We are receiving these returns by special arrangement with the Pittsburgh Post and Sun. We'd appreciate it if anyone hearing this broadcast would communicate with us, as we are very anxious to know how far the broadcast is reaching and how it is being received.
Ah, don't you just love old-timey radio? But now we go into the 1920s, right? And when people read The Great Gatsby, they always think, oh, it was just this wonderful, amazing party, and people hold Great Gatsby parties without understanding the criticism of S. Scott Fitzgerald of the materialism and emptiness of The Great Gatsby, like reading it and completely missing the point, right? Well, all good things come to an end because the roaring 20s come to a smashing halt. Some of you might be able to guess the days that I'm going to pick here. And the day that I'm going to pick Well, I mean, but it's either one of 2 days, either Black Thursday or Black Tuesday. But that would be the stock market crash, right? Think about it. When did the 20s die? Well, the 20s died when the stock market died at the end, you know, in 1929.
But on October 29, Black Tuesday, the bottom dropped out. The average price of major stocks falling nearly 40 points, with chaos at the New York Stock Exchange.
Says here, the Wall Street crash of 1929, also known as the Great Crash or Black Tuesday, was a major American stock market crash. It started, now, of course, it doesn't start immediately on one day. You start seeing, just like if you remember the Great Recession in 2008, you see problems emerging and then it starts to cascade. The Wall Street crash of 1929 started in September and ended in mid-November when share prices on the New York Stock Exchange collapsed. It was the most devastating stock market crash in the history of the United States. The Great Crash is mostly associated with October 24th, 1929, called Black Thursday, the day of the largest sell-off of shares in U.S. history, and October 29th, 1929, Black Tuesday, when investors traded 16 million shares on the New York Stock Exchange in a single day. So you have the crash of the stock market. So I'm going to put there that the 20s ended on Black Tuesday or Black Thursday. We'll call it Black Tuesday because that's probably more famously associated. October 24th, 1929, which enters us into then the Great Depression. I think you have unemployment hitting something like, what, 25%? And then you read, of course, Steinbeck's The Grapes of Wrath, probably one of the most famous novels. Is it a novella? Because it's kind of short. The novel, The Grapes of Wrath by John Steinbeck, talking about the Okies. You know, they've got the Dust Bowl because of unfortunate farming techniques and drought in the Midwest, trying to go out to California to make new lives for themselves. And it's just, you know, we were doing so well in the 20s. And then you have the Depression, the bank runs, people storing money in their mattresses because the banks are failing. Banks are failing. Oh, no, man. History's just repeating itself all over again, man. So the Great Depression, right? What ends? So that shows us the 1930s. What killed the 1930s? When did the 1930s die? For this, I'm going to pick, I think this is another one you guys might be able to pick along with me. And that would be, and once again, we're not too far off from the beginning and ends of these decades, by the way. So the 20s died in October of 1929. The 30s died on December 7th, 1941, is what I would say. December 7th, 1941, at least the 30s died for America, because that was when Pearl Harbor was attacked by the Japanese. And that began the U.S. involvement in World War II. And so immediately America launches into this huge production assembly, sending troops overseas. People, do the wartime effort at home, right? You would gather rations together, tons of manufacturing for the war effort. You had all of this, a national cohesion and identity that was now put into defeating the Axis powers in World War II. So I would say the 30s died on December 7th, 1941. Moving forward, then when did the 40s die, right? When did the 40s come to an end? And this is one where I might make a mistake here, but I can't think of anything else. I'm really truncating this decade. And my apologies to anyone listening who lived through the 1940s and will tell me there was a lot more to the 1940s than World War II. But it kind of seems like World War II was really the big thing, the big cultural change going from the 30s into the 40s. And then after the war, we have an entirely different cultural experience now that the war was over. So I'm going to say that the 40s are our shortest decade, and that ended on September 2nd, 1945, which would be called VJ Day or Victory Over Japan Day, because there was the victory VE Day, the victory in Europe before that, and then you had the victory in the Pacific Theater after that, VJ Day. And that's been marked. You think of the sailors coming home, the soldiers coming home, walking through New York, through Times Square. People are cheering. The war is announced. It's over. People are taking pictures. You have that famous photograph of the sailor grabbing the nurse and kissing her in Times Square. What most people don't know, though, is that that's not an entirely romantic image. There's actually a giant statue of it in San Diego. It's called Unconditional Surrender, which would refer to the war, that the Japanese had unconditionally surrendered. But it's also a little bit weirder than one picture. You know the one I'm talking about, right? Of the sailor grabbing the nurse. It's not she's not really into it. You could say it's not very consensual that he just kind of grabbed her and he puts her actually even in a headlock and kisses her. And if you look at the photograph, there's two actually, one in the public domain, one that is not. You can see her clutching at her nurse's uniform. She's not entirely happy about it. A woman who's come forward, and most historians think is that woman, said she was not none too happy about the kiss. But at least you could be happy that the war was over, so that's nice. And that leads us into the 50s, where now after the war effort, you have a booming U.S. economy. You have people coming home. You have their GI bills, people going to universities. You've got a real growth in U.S. manufacturing, economic prosperity. Leave It to Beaver, right? You've got really cool television and entertainment that was now entering into people's homes to provide more of that national identity. You know, the 50s, right? You've got this very iconic idea of the post-war environment, 1950s. However, when did the 50s come to an end? There are two events here. I'm tied here on when the 1950s came to an end. One of them, I would say, is October 4th, 1957. That was when the Soviet Union launched Sputnik, the first artificial satellite into space.
CBS Television presents a special report on Sputnik 1, the Soviet space satellite. Douglas Edwards reporting.
Until 2 days ago, that sound had never been heard on this Earth. Suddenly, it has become as much a part of 20th century life as the whir of your vacuum cleaner. It's a report from man's farthest frontier, the radio signal transmitted by the Soviet Sputnik, the first man-made satellite as it passed over New York earlier today.
And that really kicked the space race into gear in the U.S. and also amplifying fears about the Cold War that you have in the wake, the Soviets were our allies in defeating the Nazis in World War II, which then quickly merged into the Cold War in the second half of the 20th century. So I think really that optimism in the 50s was shattered in seeing that the Soviets had sent Sputnik into space and worried that America was now lagging behind, amplifying these kinds of Cold War fears. So I'm going to pick that as one, when Sputnik went into space, that was a day that the 50s died. The other day is February 3rd, 1959. The other day was February 3rd, 1959, being the day that the 50s died, because this particular day also has another name. It's known as the day the music died. This is the day that is referenced in Don McLean's 1971 song, American Pie. Right now you're thinking it in your head. Bye bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. Drinking whiskey and rye, singing. That was the day that the music died. Well, what is that referring to? That's referring to a plane crash that killed three famous musicians at the time, Buddy Holly, Ritchie Valens, and J.P. Richardson, a.k.a. the Big Bopper.
We interrupt this program for a special news bulletin. Three young singers who soared to the heights of show business on the current rock and roll craze were killed today in the crash of a light plane in an Iowa snow flurry. The singers were identified as Ritchie Valens, 17, Buddy Holly, 22, and J.P. Richardson, known professionally as the Big Bopper. The aircraft chartered from the Dwyer Flying Service crashed near Mason City, ironically the setting for the prominent musical The Music Man. The pilot, Roger Peterson of Clear Lake, Iowa, was also killed.
These were well-known figures in 50s rock and roll. Ritchie Valens was really up and coming in what was called Chicano rock. He's best known for La Bamba. Bamba, Bamba. And so Don McLean wrote The Day the Music Died, and it is about when these three legendary musicians all died in a plane crash outside of Clear Lake, Iowa. But also that after this, there's a big cultural change. And so the song The Day the Music Died, I could do a whole free-for-all Friday just on American Pie, which, by the way, was originally, the chorus was, bye-bye, Miss American Apple Pie. How awful would the song be if it was Bye Bye Miss American Apple Pie? It doesn't sing right at all. So they dropped Apple and just said Bye Bye Miss American Pie. That the cryptic lyrics of the song refer the singing and queen and the jester to, I don't know. I'm recording really late, by the way, in my office to have this free-for-all Friday. But if you listen to it, there are these cryptic lyrics that have symbols that refer to other cultural elements of the late 1950s and the 1960s showing this sort of change. So with the death of Buddy Holly, Ritchie Valens, and the Big Bopper, you have an end to a lot of popularity of one kind of 1950s rock and roll, leaving a kind of vacuum for other 1960s rock and pop music to be able to enter the scene, especially in the mid-60s, just 5-6 years later, when you have the British invasion with the Rolling Stones and the Beatles, among many other bands. So when the 50s died, I'm going to say Sputnik is one, and The Day the Music Died, February 3rd, the plane crash that killed Buddy Holly, Ritchie Valens, and the Big Bopper. Which then transitions us, of course, into the 1960s, right? Free Love, but you also have the Kennedy assassination, the civil rights movement. It was a time of cultural revolution, the sexual revolution. There's a lot of turmoil, but also a kind of optimism, this idea of the hippie free love movement, right? At the end of the 60s, you had the Woodstock Music Festival. But this optimism in the 1960s that always had a pall, a shadow hanging over, right? Because you have the Cold War still ramping up during this time, and we had the Cuban Missile Crisis, for example, coming within a, you know, very, very close to nuclear war hanging over people's heads. And then also, of course, the Vietnam War. The Cold War motivated the concern about stopping the spread of communism in Southeast Asia. And so you have the Vietnam War, which really started in 1955 and ended in 1975. U.S. involvement in the war didn't really happen until the 1960s, though as you get to the end of the 1960s, most Americans' public opinion is very turned against the war. What are we doing here? A lot of disillusionment, very low troop morale for the Americans who are fighting in Vietnam. And then in 1970, President Richard Nixon was saying that he was going to authorize an incursion into Cambodia, which the American public was very opposed to because Nixon had promised that he was going to kind of pull back from Vietnam. And so entering into Cambodia, I think it was to promote, to help a coup that had recently happened there with a U.S.-backed leader taking over the government. I think that's what I recall. Not a Vietnam history vet. This is just random trivia in my mind. But people were very opposed to that, and so a lot of people protested. One of these protests took place at Kent State, May 4th, 1970. And there is a documentary about this event, the Kent State shootings, called The Day the 60s Died. And so the Kent State shootings, also known as the May 4th Massacre, or the Kent State Massacre, involved the killings of 4 and wounding of 9 unarmed Kent State University students by the Ohio National Guard on May 4th, 1970. And so what you had 28 National Guard soldiers who were called out to a protest that was taking place on campus for the war. They fired 67 rounds over 13 seconds, killing 4 students, wounding 9 others.
Leave this area immediately.
And all of a sudden, I heard the shooting. And then I saw people dropping to the ground, and then I fell to the ground also, because I couldn't walk anymore.
What the investigators have to determine then is whether indeed there was a sniper, and whether the guard was justified in firing its weapons, or whether, as some people here believe, the guard, under the pressure of a rock-throwing attack, panicked and fired its weapons indiscriminately, killing 4 people.
There's a very famous photograph of one of the students, I want to say her name was Marianne Vecchio, screaming over the body of one of the students who had been killed. And so it's a very famous photograph that the woman who took the photograph ended up winning, I think, a Pulitzer, actually, for that particular photograph. And as we go forward in history, it's so interesting when you have just particular photographs that really stick with you to show you what the culture was like at that time. Like, I think along with that photograph, you have things like the raising of the flag at Iwo Jima, for example, during World War II. Just those particular photographs is just so fascinating. But I really think that the Kent State shootings marked a turning point that of the optimism of the free love movement, of the student radical movement, and seeing continual pessimism related to the Vietnam War, the Cold War. So I do think the Kent State shooting, especially happening around the year 1970, can be marked as a big cultural shift from the 60s into the 70s. A runner-up, though, that is also considered the day the 60s died was December 6, 1969. So we're getting very close to the boundary marker of the decades. And that would be Altamont, the Altamont Speedway Free Festival. It was a rock concert that was held in California. So it was like the Woodstock of the West Coast, basically. And so Woodstock had happened in August, 4 months earlier. They thought, oh, we could have our own Woodstock in California at this, you know, raceway. But it was underfunded. They ended up hiring the Hells Angels, the famous motorcycle gang, for security and just paid them with beer. A lot of drug use, a lot of disorderly conduct. There was a lot of violence, and people were killed in hit-and-run accidents. But the most famous person who died was Meredith Hunter, a young black man who was stabbed to death by the Hells Angels for coming onto the stage during the Rolling Stones were on stage, actually, that he came on stage during it. Though I think he was actually, Hunter was under the influence, I think, of LSD at the time. I think he was raising a pistol in the air. But regardless, it was just a giant... awful affair that made people think that, wow, maybe the free love movement, the music culture of the 60s was kind of a one and done thing. And if you try to replicate it, you really can't. So a lot of people picked Altamont as an honorary day the 60s died. I'm going to go with the Kent State shootings as a day of marking this cultural change, if you will, which takes us in to the 1970s, right? You've got disco, you've got exploitation films. Things are always a bit gritty. I think of the 70s, I think of things being gritty, except for the Brady Bunch. Otherwise, it just seems a bit gritty to me when I think about the 70s. So then when did the 70s die? What brought an end to the 70s? I am going to pick two dates here. One would be November 4th, 1980. November 4th, 1980 was when Ronald Reagan completely decimated Jimmy Carter. The 70s would also be remembered for the gas crisis. You're not able to go and get gas. You have the gas lines. My parents told me, I remember them telling me about this. Obviously, I wasn't alive then, but telling me, oh, yeah, you can only go get gas. Your odd number plate, you could go on Monday, even number plate on Tuesday. So you had the gas crisis. You have inflation, stagflation. You have Jimmy Carter. I love on The Simpsons ones. They say, well, we couldn't get a statue of Abe Lincoln, so we got a statue of Jimmy Carter. And they say, he's history's greatest monster, back when The Simpsons was awesome. And on November 4th, 1980, Reagan just decimated Carter. If you look at the electoral map, Reagan won with 489 electoral votes. I think that Carter only won 6 states at the time.
Ronald Reagan is about to make his acceptance speech. Presumably, he's at the Century Plaza Hotel in Los Angeles. Here is Ronald Reagan coming out at the Century Plaza. He was congratulated by President Carter about 10 minutes to 7 California time. Back now to NBC News.
Let me just say, first of all, this has been, well, there's never been a more humbling moment in my life. I would have been... not only humbled by the extent of what has happened tonight, even if it had been the cliffhanger that all of us, I think, were expecting, it would have been the same way, but just to have had the support of the people of this country. I consider the trust that you have placed in me sacred, and I give you my sacred oath that I will do my utmost to justify your faith.
And that ushered in the Reagan Revolution and a change and an embrace of more conservative values, political and cultural, in the 1980s. So I really think that Reagan killed off the 70s, November 4th, 1980. Honorary runner-up, though, August 1st, 1981. Why is that? That was when MTV, at 12:01 a.m., aired its first music video. And appropriately enough, that was Video Killed the Radio Star, a song written by Trevor Horn, no relation, Jeff Downes, and Bruce Woolley in 1979. That was part of the British New Wave group, The Buggles, including Horn, Downes, and Woolley in it. It was the first music video shown on MTV in the U.S. And the idea of Video Killing the Radio Star, this MTV culture, video culture, going into the 80s synth pop music, the synthesizer, I do think that it's very appropriate to have video kill the radio star August 1981. I have to pick that at least as an honorary runner-up of when the 70s died and the 80s really began. So when did the 80s die? When did the 80s die? As you go through the 1980s, still one of my favorite decades. So I think I probably look at the 80s with rose-colored glasses. Like, people think, oh man, the 80s were awesome. 80s music was amazing. And someone who lived to the 80s would probably say, yeah, the 50 songs that you remember are awesome, but there were hundreds, thousands of other songs that were just terrible that nobody listens to anymore. So you have a distorted view of what it's like. You know, our nostalgia-colored goggles can mislead us. So when did the 1980s die? Because the 80s also, continuing through the 70s also, in the 80s especially, you have a lot of fears of the Cold War, right? So you have the movie War Games, for example. Would you like to play a game? How about global thermonuclear war? Great movie with Matthew Broderick. You need to see it if you haven't seen it yet. I remember watching the day after. I was studying at Franciscan University of Steubenville, rented a DVD from the library because I was bored, and it was a movie about a nuclear apocalypse, and it was the movie that like scared Reagan into creating the Star Wars program for intercontinental ballistic missile defense. So you have a lot of that, but I would say that the 80s ended when we saw eventually the steps that would lead to the dissolution of the Soviet Union. And to me, that would be the fall of the Berlin Wall, that this would have been a sign of Cold War dominance, that you had the Iron Curtain in Europe separating Soviet countries from free West Europe. Though within Germany, actually, you had a wall that divided that after World War II, the city of Berlin was divided into East. You had East and West Germany, right? The Soviets controlled East Germany. West Germany was part of the free country with the other. Well, yeah, it would have been NATO, right? Because NATO was formed, say, in 1945. But within East Germany, the city of Berlin was divided. So you had West Berlin and East Berlin. So West Berlin was actually part of West Germany. You had an airstrip going in there. But to prevent people from defecting from East Germany to West Germany, and nobody wants to seem to really defect from the Western powers back to the Soviets, to the communist states. Communist states like North Korea, the Soviet Union, Cuba, they create security barriers to keep people from leaving, not from entering their workers' paradises. That should give you a thought about how effective communism really is. And the Berlin Wall was one of those barriers that had been erected. But now there was a news, but because other countries in Europe were allowing freer travel between the East and the West, East German officials were preparing to allow that through the Berlin Wall. November 9th, 1989, a East German government official, Gunter Schabowski, was at a press conference, and he was given notes to read about when the wall would be open to allow travel, more free travel between East and West Berlin. And he messed up at the press conference because he didn't read his briefing papers through. And he said permanent relocations can be done through all border checkpoints between East and West Germany. And he was then asked by a reporter, when did the regulations take effect? And he looked through his papers and he goes, in German, it's translated, as far as I know, it takes effect immediately without delay. And so a ton of East Berliners rush the wall. The guards, normally if you rush the Berlin Wall, you'd be shot, you'd be killed. They all rush the wall and the guards don't know what to do with, you know, hundreds, thousands of people coming through the checkpoints, and they let them through. And people are crying and they're laughing and they're dancing. And to me, that is the moment really when the Iron Curtain fell and you've got the 80s coming to an end, appropriately so, with David Hasselhoff dancing on the wall.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight with Peter Jennings, reporting tonight from Berlin.
From the Berlin Wall specifically, take a look at them. They've been there since last night. They are here in the thousands. They are here in the tens of thousands. Occasionally they shout, Die Mauer muss weg, the wall must go. Thousands and thousands of West Germans come to make the point that the wall has suddenly become irrelevant.
Dann ist das von David Hasselhoff, Looking for Freedom.
Which brings us into the 90s, right? Oh, the 90s, a time of Nickelodeon, Pogs, where the thing that you were most worried about in the 90s was how to get that plastic straw into your Capri Sun. Oh, it was a carefree time, I do remember. Now, this is one, you know, for me, I was born in 1985. So the 90s, I would have been 5, 6 when it started. I remember how awesome it was to watch Michael Keaton Batman. It came out in 1989, but the first time I saw it was on VHS at a friend's house in 1991. And I was immediately hooked on comic books after that point. And so even though I probably have nostalgia goggles about the 90s, but if I had to make a choice of what decade to live in, I would enjoy going back to the 90s for a lot of reasons. There were great television, great movies. I guess I can have that now on streaming, but you weren't constantly badgered by technology. It was just a freer time for everyone. So when did the 90s come to an end? Maybe you could probably guess what date I'm going to pick, right? And once again, we've got another cultural milestone not too far off from the end of the decade. I would say the 90s definitely ended on the morning of September 11th, 2001. My dad came into my bedroom because I was in Arizona. So this was at 6:30 in the morning. Turns on the TV and he says, "Look, we were attacked." And then I see the World Trade Centers on fire. And then this, the whole day was just, you go to school. And the only thing we did at school that day was just watch CNN over and over and over, talking about what was happening, trying to get the news in. At around after lunchtime, our teacher started to turn the TV off. They said it was repetitive and probably not good for us to just watch it all day. But we didn't do anything. And it really shocked our innocence, you know, that this could happen in America. And then it ushered in, you know, the war on terror, the political polarization that took place under George W. Bush. But that 90s innocence that we had was really shattered on that morning, on September 11th. So I think it's very clear that was when that ended. I also use September 11th as a generational marker. So for me, you are a millennial if you remember September 11th. So, you know, I was in my sophomore year, I think, of high school when that happened. So to remember it, so I mean, if you were born in the year 2000, sorry, you're obviously not a millennial, you're a Zoomer, right? So Gen Z are people who do not have memories of 9/11. They don't remember 9/11 happening. If you're a millennial, it happened when you were coming of age, when you were in high school, junior high school, or college, that I would say you are in millennial territory. My wife would barely be on the cusp of that. I think she was in like late elementary school when that happened. Which ushers us into the 2000s, right? So we go into the 2000s. We've got this turmoil. We also have the growth of internet communities. You have a little bit of Facebook. You have Facebook for high school and college, but it had not gone mainstream yet. We had LiveJournal. Oh, yes. Do you remember LiveJournal? That was a source of drama for everybody. You would go and write on your LiveJournal and people would go and read it. Ah, endless drama related to LiveJournal. MySpace. Before Facebook, though, you had MySpace, and that was just supremely annoying. And people left MySpace for the suburbs of Facebook because it was uniform, cleaner, and nicer. You also, in the 2000s, you had that punk rock. Oh, gosh, that stuff was just annoying. She's just the flavor of the week. He's too stoned. Nintendo. I feel like every 2000 song sounded like that, or was Limp Bizkit. But you also had, and this is coming over from the 90s as well, you either had the whiny faux punk rock, or you had the pop music like the boy bands NSYNC, Backstreet Boys, and the lesser known, lesser appreciated ones, which are underappreciated, 98 Degrees, O-Town. You got to remember O-Town, right? Come on, I got to think of the O-Town song. Nope, it's gone. Sorry, O-Town. The memory's a blur for me there. When did the 2000s end, though? Here's the date I'm going to pick when the 2000s ended. June 29th, 2007. Now, why that date? Do you remember what happened? June 29th, 2007. Steve Jobs from Apple unveiled a super cool new technology, the iPhone.
So, three things. A widescreen iPod with touch controls, a revolutionary mobile phone, and a breakthrough internet communications device. An iPod, a phone, and an internet communicator. An iPod, a phone. Are you getting it? These are not three separate devices. This is one device.
Oh, yes, you could have your something, because before that, if you wanted to go out and have a good time, you had your MP3 player in one device. Your phone was another device. Your camera, I used to carry around a digital camera to take pictures of events that were happening in my life, and then I would download them and then print out the pictures later. I used to, before that, would carry around a disposable camera if I would go on trips and do things and send it off to go get the film developed. But then with the iPhone, you had all of that in one package, and then the ability to be on the internet to communicate with one another and carry around this little television slash computer slash brain drain device in your pocket. And that's when I think things really changed. That in 2007, you have the iPhone, you have YouTube, you have Facebook, you have the beginnings of the social media environment that we're all stuck in now and realize, oh, maybe this wasn't a great thing we came up with. I know social media really didn't take off more until the early 2010s, but I think the 2010s, that precursor, that beginning, June 29, 2007, the release of the iPhone, moved us out of the 2000s and into the 2010s. Also, around that time, you have in 2008, the election of Barack Obama, which continued this political polarization in the U.S., going from that and then to 2016, of course, with the election of Donald Trump. And you have that continuing trajectory of the 2010s of this explosive growth in technology, explosive growth in social media and communication, which leads to polarization and for good and for ill because of this greater communication that we have. And so finally, now we've got to our last decade. When did it end? When did the 2010s come to an end? I believe, I guess there's two different ways you want to put it. It depends if you consider the COVID-19 pandemic part of the 2010s or not. I don't. I feel like as divided as we were before, the pandemic really radically changed our culture. I'm going to say it was not a part of the 2010s. It marked a shift into the 2020s. The growth of remote work, for example, was huge. The financial and social changes that emerged from the pandemic, you know, the normalization of everything being remote, even doing meetings on Zoom. Like prior to the pandemic, if I told my boss, I don't really want to come in, can we just talk on Zoom? They would have thought you were rude. Like, what are you talking about? You can't just come in. Now it's just normal. Oh, yeah, we can just hop on Skype and we can do that. There's a little bit of pushback now. So I'm not going to pick the pandemic. You know, that's obviously what a 2-3 year event. I'm going to put it on a particular day when I feel like the 2010s ended and we stepped foot into the weird, unknown world of the 2020s, not knowing what would behold us. And that would be March 19th, 2020. March 19th, 2020 was when the state of California initiated the lockdown and Governor Newsom had a stay-at-home order and everyone had to be in their homes. You couldn't go out. Now, for me, that's when it really changed. America had never been like that before. We had the pandemics, like, oh no, you know, we've been through pandemics before, right? We had swine flu, you got bird flu, MRSA, but this was different in that now there was this idea that government could coerce and compel people to radically change their lifestyle, using the force of the state to compel people. And you felt it. I lived in California at this time. And it was just completely bizarre. Just that being told, yeah, you can't be out on the roads right now. That's illegal. You can't go to the store you want to go to. The beaches were closed. They didn't close those immediately. They eventually closed them. But everything just had been locked down. Very, very different. The only thing I do miss from that early stage of the pandemic was I used to sneak my kids out to beat the lockdown rules. I would take them to college campuses because nobody was there and they weren't by major roads so the police wouldn't drive by and see you. And we were the only people there. It felt like being in a post-apocalyptic movie. And we'd go and play soccer and ride our bikes. And I don't know, it was a cool bonding experience with my kids when we did that. Then we'd get back in our car and we would drive and wonder what we would say to the police if we were going to be pulled over. I remember driving on Interstate 5 at the beginning of the pandemic. It was a 5 o'clock on a Tuesday, going through Interstate 5, and we were the only car on the freeway. We could look in both directions. We were the only car. Surreal. Weird. Because if you know the I-5 on a weekday at 5 p.m. in California, it's bumper to bumper at that time. But just bizarre. So I really feel like it was not just the pandemic itself. We've been through those before. But it was seeing the state now saying, guess what? You can't go home. You can't leave your home. You have to follow these rules. So different. I mean, if COVID had happened in 1990 rather than 2020, I don't think they could have done that, because it was through social media that we said, you know what, you don't have to. We're closing the schools. Well, how's my kid going to get educated? He can do Zoom. You can't go to work. What am I supposed to do? Well, we'll just telecommute to the office. We didn't have that technology in 1990. We just would have said, well, let's just do our best and go out there. But because we had that technology developed in the 2010s, it was applied to completely isolate us in that regard. And that really ushered us in to something completely different in that regard. All right, we went through 11 decades. Isn't that something? If I didn't tell you before, by the way, it was the 60s that motivated me to want to do this Free for All Friday. And I decided to go through all the other decades instead. Well, I hope you learned something. I hope you enjoyed this jaunt through 110 years of memory lane. And yeah, I just hope that you all have a very blessed weekend.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.